On Tuesday, July 28th, Iraqi security forces clashed with members of Mojahedin-e-Khalb organization at Camp Ashraf. Iraqi forces were met with resistance as they attempted to enter the camp and establish a police post. It has been reported that 7 MKO members were killed during the riot. The Iraqi government has repeatedly asked the MKO to leave Iraq in the past year.
Their presence in the country, the inhabitants of Camp Ashraf, the presence in the country is illegal. They don't have any humanitarian refugee status. They don't have any political asylum status. They have no status at all.
In January, the United States, who had allowed the group to remain at Camp Ashraf, handed over control of the camp to Iraqi security forces.
The Ashraf camp issue is entirely an Iraqi issue, and the Iraqi government should decide about the faith of its inhabitants. Of course, they should not be forced to go any place that their lives might be endangered. But on the other hand, the Iraqi government has the right to impose its rule over its soil, and Ashraf camp is part of Iraqi soil. So they are entitled to sort of open a police station there and have their rules imposed there.
Mujahedin-e-Khalb organization, also known as MKO or MEK, is a terrorist organization that was founded in 1965. Originally, it engaged in armed struggle against the regime of Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, the Shah of Iran, and presently they advocate the overthrow of the Islamic Republic. The organization claims to be a legitimate dissident organization fighting for democracy in Iran.
The MEK engages in a lot of lobbying activity inside the United States and in Europe and other places, Canada, trying to convince people in government that they are a legitimate democratic alternative to the Iranian regime. Now, anybody who really knows about the group would be able to tell you immediately that, you know, for a number of reasons, this is completely wrong. You know, there's absolutely no chance that a group like the MEK could ever be a democratic alternative.
MKO has been listed as a terrorist organization in the U.S., Canada, Iraq, and Iran, and until recently in the Council of European Union. Currently, their self-appointed president, Maryam Rajavi, resides in France. The French government allowed her stay under the condition that the organization renounce violence. There are many members of MKO still active in the U.S. and Canada. Ironically, even though the two North American countries have designated MKO as a terrorist organization, their members have been allowed to lobby and take part in fundraising activities.
It is curious that the group is still allowed to remain active in the United States in terms of various fundraising activities and lobbying activities that they engage in.
It was during the Iran-Iraq War in 1986 that MKO established its headquarters in Iraq. While in Iraq, they set up Camp Ashraf and received military aid, weapons, and financial support from Saddam Hussein's government. In exchange, MKO's army supported Saddam Hussein in many of his deadly military operations and became known as Saddam's private army. Near the end of the Iran-Iraq War on July 26, 1988, MKO's army crossed into Iranian territory with the backing of Iraq's Air Force. In the end, MKO's army was forced back to Iraq, leaving behind thousands of casualties and the complete destruction of an Iranian city near the border. Iran Today's team went to the city of Islamabad near the Iraqi border to gather eyewitness accounts to MKO's attack on this city. Mazie Gambarpour, a nurse at Islamabad Hospital, shared her experience with us.
به رگبار گرفتن به هیچ کس هم رحم نمی کردن آمبولانس های آتی سدن آمبولانس های بردن تا اونجا که تنستن برای مجروح خودشان و نهایتا بیمارستان با آتش کشیدن یعنی هیچ سوابقی بعد از اون جریان دیگر ما از بیمارستان نداشتیم کلن دوچار آتش سوزی شده بود از بین رفته بود
With the assistance of Saddam Hussein, MKO was able to carry out various terrorist attacks within Iran. Using mortars, they randomly attacked different areas of Tehran, causing death, destruction, and damage.
The mortar attacks in Iran was actually against the known strategy of the MKO, because their strategy was to conquer Iran with the sort of National Liberation Army, the attack of National Liberation Army. And they were saying that these sort of activities would not help to overthrow the Iranian regime. But I think, it's my opinion, that somehow they wanted to please the, what they call the landlords, in a way, and to show him that they are capable of doing something, because Saddam Hussein was losing his faith with this organization that they would be able to do anything at all. So that might be the reason, but I don't think that these mortar attacks had any military significance and didn't help the organization at all. And on the contrary, it sort of puts the organization into a political deadlock, particularly in Europe and the United States.
In 1991, and after the first Persian Gulf War, the Kurds in northern Iraq and the Shiite Muslims in southern Iraq protested Saddam's brutal dictatorship. MKO's army played a significant role in carrying out Saddam Hussein's massacre of the Iraqi minorities.
MKO army did something for Saddam that no one in Iraqi land, in Iraqi national, did for Saddam. The massacre of Kurds in north and massacre of Shias in the Arab march in the south was the act of MKO people. No Iraqi allowed himself or herself to do that. Even the presidential army of Saddam Hussein, which was very notorious, and they do everything for Saddam Hussein, but even they refused to do that. But MKO did that. The leader wanted to do that. The junior members had to do that.
During the same period, as Iraq and Saddam's government suffered great financial loss as a result of international sanctions, MKO came to Saddam's rescue by selling Iraqi oil in the black market.
With the coverage of Western organizations, Western businesses, they used to shop for Saddam Hussein in many ways, especially in military section, and sell illegal Saddam's oil in Western market, which was obviously, which wasn't allowed at all.
They also took part in money laundering and international drug trafficking.
The MEK was involved in all kinds of schemes and machinations in order to finance their activities at that time. So, for example, the FBI was investigating them for credit card fraud in the United States, for insurance fraud. The DEA in the 1980s was investigating the MEK for attempting to smuggle heroin into the United States and Europe, for example.
Subsequent to the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq, the U.S. military gave Camp Ashraf some protection. The group was disarmed but was allowed to continue with their activities.
The Mujahideen have been held in Iraq, in Camp Ashraf, under the protection, let's say, of the Americans. And there have been repeated efforts to help the members inside the organization to be freed from the constrictions of the cult. And this is basically a human rights issue. It's nothing to do with politics, it's nothing to do with relations between East, West, or anything. It is about the human rights of those people. They are forced to stay in that camp by their own leadership.
MKO has claimed to have provided the United States intelligence information on Iran's nuclear program. The leader of another terrorist organization, Jundullah, has recently admitted in an interview that his organization is in contact with MKO and receives logistic information that assists them in carrying out terrorist activities in Iran.
A group which had members inside the United States was involved in armed activity against the Iranian government. We were, of course, not at war with Iran, even though we had bad relations with Iran at that time, the United States. And so it would be a violation of the Neutrality Act to have people within the United States who were fighting against Iran.
There's no question that MKO has transformed into a cult rather than a dissident military organization. Massoud and Mayam Rajavi have used psychological tactics in brainwashing their members. Their method of training bears a dark resemblance to the behavior and techniques utilized by cults in gaining control of their people.
The main characteristic of a cult, the way that they operate, is first of all they will recruit people. They recruit on a message by saying, for example, we have the answer to this terrible problem, whatever it is. And different cults have different problems which they say they will solve. But really what they recruit with is methodology. The word brainwashing is a little bit sort of simplistic, but that is basically what it is. And you can manipulate somebody's way of thinking within a couple of days, amazingly enough. It is quite a frightening phenomenon, and I think it's something which people are not aware enough of, and everyone thinks it won't happen to them. But that's like somebody saying, I will never be hypnotized, and yet hypnotism is quite common and people can be hypnotized, and that does evoke change in people's brains, which is clearly discernible on CT scans and such like. It's just the same with this kind of mind control methods which cults use. Now once you're into that organization, the whole system works and operates in a way that will keep you in there. They will cut you off from your financial support, and the way they do this, of course, is very clever, because they'll say that, you know, you need to contribute and you're not really a full member unless you, and they have steps by which they'll lead you further and further into giving up your family, your material support, and even in the case of Camp Ashraf, you know, your whole external world. And within that isolation, within that artificial universe which they've created, they can implement into your mind all sorts of weird and wonderful ideas which your normal self would never accept. But you're in an environment where you don't have that reference point and you don't have those emotional ties, and it's frighteningly easy for anyone to be involved in a cult.
Much like cults, any deviation from the leader's plan, order and agenda is severely reprimanded with torture, imprisonment, and even execution of its members. Mayam Rajavi and her husband Massoud Rajavi have had hypnotic power over the constituents.
Any more shakal wa sazman bazi mikardam. Kho hame ino ma itraz mikardim. Dar nihayat ham dar kamal sadaqat goftim aqa ma ta alan baatun budim. الان هم هیچ مخالفتی با تو نیست، ولی از مبارزه نمیتونیم بکنیم. شما به خیر، ما به سلامت. ما حتی تا الان که مخالف جمهوری اسلامی بودیم کماکان مخالف هستیم، ولی دیگه نمیخوایم داخل شما بمانیم. این حقا به ما بدید. ما را بردن کردن زندان زیر شکنجه. یک سال و دو ماه من داخل سلول انفرادی بودم، نمیفهمیدم تابستان که یه نزد مثلا چیزی. به حدی میزدن من سه شب و سه روز بعضی موقع نه اقرار نه مدفوع خودم نمیتونستم کنترل کنم.
An example of this control manifested itself when Mayam Rajavi was arrested in Paris in June 2003. The French police raided MKO offices, accusing the organization of terrorist activities, association with terrorist organizations, and financing terrorist operations. In retaliation against his wife's arrest, Massoud Rajavi ordered some MKO members to publicly set themselves on fire. In essence, his members were reduced to human tortures as a bargaining tool to rescue the release of his wife.
They are quite literally brainwashed by the leadership, and from that point of view Rajavi is able to control them and manipulate them into doing practically anything, from dying for him killing for him, getting divorced for him, giving up their children for him, giving up everything for him. And that is the value of this organization, that the members are not in control of their own lives. Yes, when Mariam Rajavi was arrested in Paris in 2003, the members were ordered to burn themselves in the street as a protest, and they did. Many, many members have signed, including, for example, Alireza Jafarzadeh, who is on Fox TV quite regularly. He's a Mujahideen member still today, and he has signed a piece of paper saying, "I will die for you. Just give the order."
What has really hurt me, actually, when I realized that when Mariam Rajavi was arrested in Paris on 17th of June 2003, 10 individuals, members of the organization, were ordered to commit self-immolation. Despite the fact that Mariam Rajavi herself didn't even commit a simple hunger strike inside prison. And this shows that this leadership, although they want everything from the supporters, they are not ready to give a single sacrifice themselves. And this is like all cults, that they want everything for the leader, and they actually, the rank and files of the organization should pay all the price.
In 2003, the U.S. Army was compelled to establish a temporary international presence facility alongside Camp Ashraf to shelter anyone who wanted to leave the MKO. Over the last 6 years, several hundred people have left Camp Ashraf to take refuge at TIPF.
بعد از اینکه رژیم صدام از بین رفت و ایران اشغال شد امریکا اینا اردوگاه اشرف دو گروه شد، یکی خود اردوگاه به یه محل دیگه انتقال پیدا کرد، یه اردوگاهی درست شد حالا مخفف TIPF TIPF که این اردوگاه که بیش از 1000 نفر توش مستقر بودن، اینها افرادی بودن که واقعا سرنوشت خودشون رو از سازمان جدا کردن و جدا اومدن، بیشتر با آمریکا ارتباط داشتن. اینا تقاضای پناهندگی از کشورهای مختلف کردن.
The Iraqis have also suggested the residents of the camp should return to Iran.
We are seriously adopting a very detailed policy to get this terrorist organization out of Iraq and to get all the residents of Camp Ashraf repatriated either to Iran or to a third country.
Mariam Rajavi has responded to this by asking for the assurance that the members will not be prosecuted or persecuted upon their return by the Iranian government, thereby demanding amnesty.
Recently, Mariam Rajavi announced that if the Iranian government guarantee their security, they would like to come back to Iran. But I think this announcement was only a political tactic, and it should not be taken serious, because what they mean is to come into Iran and carry on their activities, and I don't think the Iranian government would accept that. But if anyone, an individual leaves the organization and says that he has left the organization and he denounces armed struggle and he wants to go to his normal life, then there would be nothing should stop him.
دقیقاً تمام تبلیغات سازمان، چیزی که به صورت تو خود ذهن آدم بود تا قبل از ورودش به ایران، اینه که تو ایران نمیدونم شکنجه، شلاق، اعدام، فلان بسینا، تو که تماماً سازمان اینطوری به صورت تو ذهن آدم سالیان اینو تو ذهن ما به صلاح این شکلی القا کرده بود که فقط تو ایران اعدام میکنن. به محض ورود هر کسی که تنش به تن سازمان خورده باشه اعدام. ولی ما وقتی برگشتیم نه، هیچ خبری نیست. تمام این حرفا فقط دوباره برای حفظ نیروه، برای اینکه تشکیلات خودش سر پا بمونه.
If you ask a mujahid today what is your aim, they will just automatically tell you we're going to overthrow the Iranian regime, because that is their raison d'etre. The way that they are intending to do that is to do it through violent means, not through peaceable means. No matter what the declaration of Mariam Rajavi in Europe, that Mujahideen is no longer a violent organization, it cannot be anything else. That's what it is, and that is why they remain in Iraq even today. When the Americans went into Iraq, they captured the Mujahideen, forced them to disarm, but kept them in Camp Ashraf. The only reason you can keep an organization like that is because they may have some use for you later on, but the only use the Mujahideen have is as a military organization. They are trained to die and to kill to order, and that's their value for Western powers. Where else are you going to find an organization for which you have to pay nothing? You don't have to pay anything because Iraq has already paid the price. But you can actually use them against your enemy, Iran, to negotiate, threaten, cajole and such like. And you don't have to pay anything, but they will die for their leader.
I think that if Americans understood how most Iranians feel about this group, and if the goal of the United States is to have better relations with Iran, they would be more inspired to take concrete action regarding the group.
Iran has declared that those members who have not committed any specific crime can return to their homeland. More than 300 have taken up the offer so far.
ما این قول رو میدیم که مرحله پیگیر کنیم، چون میدونیم خیلی از اینها کاری نکردن، فقط خوب فکر دارن، چون یه دب یه روزه با اینا بودن و ما دیدیم کسایی که فقط جرمشون بوده که با اینا بودن یه مدتی، اینا خیلی راحت مورد بخشش واقع شدن و الان دارن زندگی میکنن. ما برای این عده که اکثریت شاید بگیم اینا تشکیل میدن، میتونیم واسطه بشیم در داخل با مقامات خودمون مذاکره بکنیم و چنانچه منعی برای حضورشون نباشه اینا رو بیاریم داخل و اینا کار خودش رو ادامه بدن، زندگی خودش رو ادامه بدن.
Iraqi officials have also suggested that MKO members request political asylum in other countries. So far, however, such applications have not been received well.